And now, with more astronomical news and things to watch out for in the night sky this month, here's Robert Massey from the Royal Astronomical Society.
Astronomy is very much a dynamic science, and the nice thing about it is one of those things where just occasionally the public can see some quite exciting stuff quite unpredictably. And a good example of that is the fireball, or bolide if you prefer, a very bright meteor that was seen over the UK and Ireland over the weekend. And this came in on the 21st of September. It moved from east to west across the sky, mostly seen across northern England. Possibly there was a sighting in Belgium. It seems to have crossed the North Sea. And then it seems possibly to have ended its flight somewhere out over the Atlantic beyond the west of Ireland. And then there's something of an open question as to whether anything actually made it through the atmosphere and landed. Quite probably not in this case, but it was spectacular. And events like this are when you get either, say, a piece of space debris, so something from a satellite that people have put together, or a natural bit of rock coming in at a reasonable speed, and they slam into the atmosphere. They get incredibly hot, but because they're somewhat bigger than average, a lot of meteor shooting stars that we see tend to be rather faint, you can get quite a spectacular show, even if it's perhaps something the size of a boulder. And looking at the analysis, a fair number of people saw this. One good analysis I've seen suggests it probably was a natural object because of the direction it was traveling, which is actually opposite to the way that satellites go around the Earth. And also there are previous examples of this. For example, back in the early 1990s, there was something called the Peekskill meteorite that landed in New York State and actually made a dent in someone's car bonnet. So it does really demonstrate that you think that you're completely disconnected from what's going up in the sky. Actually, sometimes the sky sort of comes to pay a visit and bits of rock come down from space, and this is an example of something like that.
It's very nice that people were so excited about it, really, but how do you actually go about doing the analysis? What do we need to do in order to say, right, this was definitely a piece of space junk or definitely something natural?
I think it's very hard to be absolutely definite about these things. Reading the reports, from what I can see, the suggestion initially was it was space junk simply because it was slow moving and bright. But the counter argument is it was going in the wrong direction, because most of the satellites, if you've ever seen the International Space Station, for example, go from west to east across the sky. This was going east to west. And if you imagine something coming into the Earth's atmosphere, coming out of orbit around the Earth, it would carry on in that same direction and travel at least more or less. And there are very few satellites that go in the opposite direction. So best guess from that, you can work out the orbital path from that, is that it probably was a natural piece of rock. And it's been suggested that it's connected with the Aten family of asteroids, which are a family of asteroids that orbit slightly inside the Earth's orbit around the Sun, so a rock connected with that. But it's very much about looking at the track, looking at where people see it at different sites on the ground. If you get pictures, which include, say, the ground as well, and you can estimate how high it was above the horizon in degrees, that's very helpful because you can triangulate, you can work out exactly how high it was at different points and thereby work out how it came into the Earth's atmosphere. If you're very well organized and you have things like spectroscopic analysis, you can even tell what it's made of. I haven't heard of anybody else being able to do that in this case, at least not yet.
And on the topic of exciting things to see in the night sky, it looks like we're going to have a particularly impressive comet to look at next year.
Absolutely right. At the end of December next year, I've just heard today that there's the prospect of an extraordinarily bright comet. Now, I should stress that any predictions around this kind of thing are quite tentative. It's a long way off, more than a year away, before this thing reaches its closest point to the Sun and then the Earth. But if the predictions bear out, it could be one of the brightest ones in modern times. It would come in quite close to the Sun. It would come in within about 2 million kilometers from the Sun. And when it gets to that point, it could be spectacularly bright. Now, it's the kind of object that may be so close to the Sun that to see it safely, you actually have to stand in shadow. In other words, put the Sun behind a wall. But you still then might be able to see this thing in daylight next to the Sun. And there are examples of that in history. In fact, even in the 1960s, Comet Ikea-Zeki was one of this class that was seen in that way. They're called sun grazer objects simply because they come so close in. They tend to lose a lot of material as they come close in. Sometimes they break up because of the intense heat of the Sun there. And so it is the case that rather than having one comet coming in, you might end up with three coming out because it's broken into three. And I should talk a bit about the discovery of it. It was discovered by something called the International Scientific Optical Network. A Russian astronomer and a Belarusian astronomer found it. And very quickly, there was a follow-up by an amateur astronomer, Nick Howes, in the UK, who helped its orbit, and then they quite quickly realized that it was going to come close to the sun, and in such a way that it had given its size and so on, and the fact we can see it so far from the sun already, it was going to come fairly close to the Earth as well, and thereby be a very spectacular object. All I can say is watch this space, really, because something like this could be extraordinary. It may be that the predictions don't bear out. It may be that the comet fizzles out on the way in, which sometimes happens. But it does sound quite promising and certainly something to look forward to in just before Christmas next year.
So we'll keep our eyes peeled to the skies for that one. On a very different tack, though, it looks like finally the private sector is really making steps into getting into space properly.
That's right. What we've got now is an example of two companies that are following the NASA strategy, at least two companies following the NASA strategy of resupplying the International Space Station. One of the decisions that NASA has made is obviously they've ended the shuttle program, and they're looking for private operators just to ferry astronauts to and from the space station, because at the moment they depend entirely on the Russians and their Soyuz transport vehicle, which is fine as far as it goes, but I suppose there are issues of national pride, and the Americans want to be able to take their astronauts into space. So there are two companies. Firstly, SpaceX, with its Dragon spacecraft, is working successfully now and at least bringing cargo to the space station. I'm sure it's only a matter of time before that's able to bring people too. And then there's the Cygnus vehicle built by the Thales Corporation, which is doing much the same thing. So you've got a degree of competition, actually. I mean, they may do complementary activities, but I'm sure there's a competitive element there too. And my hope is that what that allows NASA to do is to think bigger, to look at the things like missions to Mars and so on. Not that that's a trivial thing to do, or perhaps a mission to a nearby asteroid, or perhaps even a return to the moon. But it doesn't seem like such a bad decision that they should focus on the big things that these private companies at the moment really couldn't manage, and to allow them to supply the space station in this way.
And thinking of future space missions, you've recently had a meeting where you're looking at the directions we might take. What sorts of things have you been talking about?
Well, we're actually going to have the meeting in a couple of weeks' time, and it's going to cover really almost a wish list for UK space science missions. There was an item in the perhaps a little known space innovation and growth strategy that came out a couple of years ago, which recommended that the UK should, and I quote, initiate and lead at least three exploration or science missions by 2030. So the UK scientists are now getting their act together, talking to the European Space Agency, talking to each other about the kind of things that could be done. And it is a quite exciting list. You won't find details of most of these yet because they're being developed. But, for example, there's the idea of sending a mission around the poles of the sun, again, to look at it there. That was done by the Ulysses spacecraft many years ago, but this would be something rather closer to investigate particles above thunderclouds, so in other words, from orbit, to look over the poles of the Earth, to study stars again using spectroscopy, and really some great ideas. So all credit to the people for coming forward to talk about these things. And I guess that if they're putting that into the European Space Agency program, provided at least we have a little bit of money from the UK to make them happen, then we could see some great science happening. I mean, the recent decision, for example, to send the JUICE, terrible name really, I think they need to improve the acronym on this, but it is under discussion. The JUICE mission to Jupiter, for example, is a good case in point that UK planetary scientists, UK space scientists are quite imaginative and unfortunately, as you have to be in these times, are quite good at making a small amount of money going a long way.
Robert Massey from the RAS.